Thanks for listening to the best of Outkick the Coverage podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning from 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern, 3 to 6 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for Outkick the Coverage at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every morning on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
This is the best of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis on Fox Sports Radio.
All right, top five live from London for the first time ever here as we get ready for Titans-Chargers this weekend. In the fifth spot, I have got the Baltimore Ravens. I don't see how anyone who watched their beatdown of the Tennessee Titans could not have been impressed. The Ravens have otherwise lost two close games. They lost on the road against the Bengals. They lost on the road against the Browns. Interestingly, of all the NFL teams, I like to go to point differential sometimes as kind of a tie break just to see how teams are doing overall, because sometimes the win-loss doesn't give you an accurate reflection of how dominant you've been. For instance, the Ravens' 21-0 win over the Titans on Sunday was the first time, and I think you were there, Jason Martin, so I bet they're in your top five as well, but it was the first time the Titans have ever been held scoreless at their home stadium in 20 years. And just a phenomenal performance by the Ravens. They are plus 76 on the year. So I have the Ravens slotted in at number five overall on my list. In the four spot, I know I made the fearless prediction before the season started. I said the Patriots are not going to win their division, and they're going to go 8-8. Well, that's a more difficult argument to make in the wake of the New England Patriots having won three games in a row, three straight home games. We'll see how they do on the road against the Bears. But I've got the Patriots now as my number four team in the NFL through 6 weeks. In my three spot, I think this team, other than their opening week performance, which was obviously a dud against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, the New Orleans Saints sitting at 4-1, good long break in the wake of their Thursday night win. Drew Brees now the all-time yardage leader. I've got the Saints sliding in at the three spot. In the second spot, even though they lost, I'm actually even more convinced the Chiefs are for real. 43-40, they could have easily won that game Sunday Night Football on the road in Foxborough. They withstood everything that the Patriots had to give them, got down 24-9, came surging back, ended up losing by three. I feel even more confident in the Chiefs. I've got them in my number two spot. And number one overall, even though they haven't been that great in the last couple of weeks, and I even toyed around with leaving the Chiefs or putting the Chiefs in at number one on this list because I thought arguably the Chiefs' loss on the road in Foxborough was more impressive than the Rams' win the last couple of weeks have been on the road against both the Broncos and against the Seattle Seahawks. But the Rams' overall number one point differential in the NFL, I have got the Rams number one plus 78. That's how much they have outscored every other team in the NFL by. Like I said, the Ravens are our second best with plus 76 differential. That is my top five. How would you break them down, Jason Martin?
We do have some differences, as a matter of fact. At number five, I've got the Chargers. I don't have the Ravens in the top five. I have the Ravens at six. The Ravens are the best defense in football. After what we've seen from the Jaguars a couple of times this season, certainly against Dallas, you have to start paying attention. The Vikings have not exactly been as advertised on defense. The Ravens were ridiculous, so I want to give them honorable mention for sure. The Titans on Sunday faced a 4th-and-19, 2 4th-and-20s, a 4th-and-18, a 4th-and-13, a 4th-and-15, a 4th-and-11, a 4th-and-9, and a 4th-and-8.
That's a snuff film. By the way, how was that experience in the stadium?
It was terrible. Clay, I went to two football games this year in person. I attended the Tennessee Volunteers against the Florida Gators, and I attended the Titans versus the Ravens game on Sunday. That was basically a wake in the second half on Sunday here at Nissan Stadium in the rain. And what was sad about it was a 14-0 game. All you need is one sustained drive, but you go one for 10 on third down. Yeah, one play.
You just need one play to make that a game. It's not like the Ravens won 45-0. In the first half, if the Titans had made a single play, that game could have been interesting. I don't think they got inside of the Ravens' 37-yard line, which is almost unheard of for an NFL team to be incapable of even getting in field goal range in the entire game.
Yeah, the 47, actually. You gave the Titans 10 yards extra credit.
Oh, wow.
It was the Baltimore 47-yard line. They didn't get within 15 yards of Ryan Succop's range. That's how bad that football game was. I've got the Chargers at 5 because their only two losses are to the Rams and to the Chiefs.
Yeah, that's a good point.
They're 4-2 right now. You've got Phillip Rivers playing out of his mind, 15 touchdowns to 3 interceptions, got a passer rating of 115, 4th in the league in QBR, 69% completion percentage at 36 years old, over 1,700 yards. Only guy with a higher passer rating in the league right now is Drew Brees. So I'll give him that, and I haven't even talked about Melvin Gordon and how good he's been. So I've got them at 5. At 4, I've got New Orleans. And it's kind of splitting hairs, but that's because I've got the Patriots in the top 5. And the Saints against the Bucs, and the fact that I don't necessarily buy into their defense. Their offense is explosive. I think, actually, you could look at most of the top 5 and most of the league and say, do you buy into their defense? I don't buy into New Orleans, but I think that they're probably, either them or the Panthers are going to win the division, and the other one's going to get a wild card, I would say. Number 3, I've got Kansas City. I almost put them at number 2, but they lost the game to the Patriots, and the Patriots are 4-2 now. Maybe they end up with home field advantage as a result. If they do, I don't know how that plays out because the Patriots have only lost 2 games since 2006 with Tom Brady at quarterback at home. So that's just incredible what they've been able to do. So I've got the Chiefs at 3. Absolutely believe they're legit. Andy Reid, one of the great play callers in the history of the NFL. Patriots at 2. They're 4-2. What a great game that was. And then the Rams, and you're right. 23-20, not that impressive. The week before, not particularly impressive compared to what they had done. The Vikings game's the most impressed I've been in one football team all season long, what the Rams did there. But I've still got them at number 1. I really hope we see them in the Super Bowl for the NFC because I want to see Sean McVay and whatever it is he's going to do from a play-calling standpoint against probably Kansas City or New England, if you had to bet right now, which means probably another high-scoring, exciting Super Bowl. So that's where I am in my top 5. Before we get to Eddie Garcia, let's go ahead and do the bottom 5.
Yeah, and I would say as well what I think is important there you just mentioned. I do think it's not even too early if you are a Chiefs fan to start aggressively monitoring who's going to have home field advantage. Because as good as the Patriots have been in the postseason, and you hit on it how dominant they are if they make you run through Foxborough, it's hard to believe. Even though I know they went on the road and the Jags gave them a game in the AFC Championship game, it's hard to believe that if they get a bye and they play 2 games to get to the Super Bowl, that the Patriots are going to lose at home with Tom Brady. I just in January in Foxborough, where the elements are going to be difficult. If I'm Kansas City, given how awful their postseason has been, I think it's been like since the 1990s that the Chiefs have won a single playoff game. And they've been in position to win a bunch of them, including being up 21-3, I think it was, on the Titans in that postseason game, where you would think, you know what, they are going to be in position to finally break that postseason drought, even as recently as last year. And I know, look, Patrick Mahomes is 23 years old. He hasn't been a part of that futility before. But I do think that you want to have, one, a bye, so you at least advance to the divisional round. And two, the difference between having to go on the road in New England versus getting to play at home in Kansas City, having that one game lead right now, I think that's worth paying a lot of attention to, even though we're only 6 weeks in. If you are a Chiefs fan, that is something that you should have circled, and that's something you should be monitoring at a high level, particularly because now you know, like you said, the Patriots have that tie break in the event they end up with similar records. But top 5, basically we have the same teams, except I can see a strong argument like you did for why the Chargers should be included. I just thought the Ravens were so dominant, and that point differential got them in at number 5 for me as opposed to the Chargers. Although I'm watching the Chargers play in person this weekend here in London, and I think there's a very good chance they are going to blow out the Titans, and it'll be hard to leave them out of the top 5 if they get up to 5-2. Let's roll into the bottom 5 now.
Yep.
I will start, and I will count down in descending order. In the 28th spot, I felt bad for this guy. I feel bad in all respects every time he comes into the game. It's like there's a dark cloud just waiting above him. It's Nathan Peterman. Josh Allen gets knocked out with some sort of elbow contusion or other. Nathan Peterman comes in, immediately throws a touchdown pass, and you think, wow, maybe this guy's going to come on the road and he's going to beat the Houston Texans. Texans kick a field goal, 1:45 left. Bills take possession, start to drive the other direction. Incomplete pass on first down. And then on second down, it's the Nathan Peterman special, a pick six to win the game for the Texans. Texans give the ball back after a kickoff, and I believe on the third play right after that, he throws, Nathan Peterman does, another interception, nearly returned for another pick six. That would have been one of the all-time remarkable cover jobs if the Texans had managed to cover that spread because of those double pick sixes. But as a result, the Bills, I've got in the 28th spot. Nathan Peterman continues to be cursed in the 29th spot. I feel like this is tough and maybe a little bit unfair given the fact that they arguably could have and or should have won that game last night against the Packers. But you are what your record says you are. And at this point in time, the 49ers are 1-5. And they're sitting there with C.J. Beathard, and I don't feel like they are likely to be able to make any kind of improvement on a substantial level over the course of this season. I have got them in the 29th spot, sitting again at 1-5. And in the 30th spot, I feel bad for the Colts, too, because early in the season, they lost every close game you could possibly imagine. Their point differential isn't even that bad, but when you get whipped like they did by Sam Darnold and by the Jets to fall to 1-5 and effectively have your season over, Andrew Luck has come back. They still can't really press the ball down the field. Maybe by next season he'll be better. But the only team that's been eliminated from the nation's worst division in football so far this year, the AFC South, is the Indianapolis Colts. So I've got them at the 30th spot. In the 31 spot, I've got the Giants. I think at this point the question is, why is Eli going to continue to play? What are you trying to prove? What is Odell Beckham Jr. doing on a week-to-week basis on the sidelines? What in the world is up with the Giants and their team chemistry? I think all those questions are fair and in play as the Giants have fallen to 1-5. And then in the 32nd spot, I don't know what's going on here. Maybe John Gruden is just trying to tank at this point to get rid of Derek Carr. He's already traded Khalil Mack. I think it's fair to say that John Gruden's return to the Raiders so far has been an epic failure slash disaster slash snuff film of an unbelievable level. I have got the Raiders as the 32nd best team. Bay Area sports fan in general, if you are a 49ers and a Raiders fan, there is a lot of bad football to go around. Your teams in the Bay Area, a combined, if my math is right here, 2-10 on the season. That is tough to pull off. That would be my bottom five. Yours, Jason Martin.
We have a little bit of difference here. I've got the 49ers at 28 because Kyle Shanahan's such a gifted play caller, and you saw it last night, and you're seeing what his absence has meant with Sarkisian in that same role in Atlanta. I think that they had so much invested in Garoppolo that it's just really tough for them at this standpoint, but Beathard played well last night. They probably should have won that football game. They looked good in the loss. So I'm going to bump them up just a little bit. I've got the Colts at 29, and it's sort of splitting hairs between them and the Giants. They're both terrible. Andrew Luck is a much better quarterback than Eli Manning is at this standpoint. I think that Indianapolis is a more cohesive football team than what we're seeing in New York. That's why I've got them ahead of the Giants. I've got the Raiders at 31, not 32, but they're bad. Derek Carr probably going to be traded, at least what you're hearing. They've got Amari Cooper on the block. They've got Carl Joseph they're fielding offers for. John Gruden, a terrible hire. I said it beforehand. I'll say it again. Most overrated guy in all of sports. The NFL has changed four times since that guy last coached, and you're seeing him now coaching 20 years. He might as well be coaching in black and white at this point on a UHF television. And then number 32, a team you didn't mention at all, the Arizona Cardinals. I've got them.
Did I forget
dead
the
last.
Cardinals? That's
yeah.
How...
Yeah, they're not good, Clay. They are dead last in offense. Josh Rosen, I think, is going to be really good, but he's got no help. They have no idea what they're doing with David Johnson. The coach, Steve Wilks, comes out yesterday and says, all our jobs are in jeopardy, including mine. Dude, six games into his career, and he's already thinking, maybe I need to cancel this lease and get out of this. Like, it is an absolute joke down there in Arizona.
that's perfect that I completely forgot about the Arizona Cardinals, which may be the best indictment possible of how bad they are right now, that I didn't even think, when I was doing my bottom five, they were so bad and so irrelevant that I didn't even think to put them in. They should obviously probably have been in my bottom five. I'll bump the Bills out, but that's really pretty outstanding. That's even better to have just completely forgotten them, which I think speaks to their irrelevance.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Final segment of this first hour, we rejoin Clay Travis as he is in London. And Clay, the college football weekend has its share of interesting games, but maybe no situation right now is more interesting than what Alabama should do with their Heisman front-running quarterback Tua Tagovailoa, who got injured against Arkansas, then slid against Missouri. Saban says he could have come back into the game, but didn't end up doing so. I guess the big question is, do you play Tua Tagovailoa against the Vols when I think most everyone understands you probably beat Tennessee with Jalen Hurts?
Well, we know they can beat Tennessee with Jalen Hurts because they have beaten Tennessee with Jalen Hurts the past two seasons, and they've done it really without being challenged at all. This is not a particularly good Tennessee team, even with the win coming off against Auburn, Alabama, around a 29-point favorite. I would say the difference between a Jalen Hurts-helmed Alabama team and a Tua helmed Alabama team is like the difference between HD and standard television. Tua just makes everything crisper. It's a different universe when he's in at quarterback, and we've seen that happen a lot going back and forth so far this season. Having said that, the Alabama season effectively is probably going to come down to that game against LSU. Yeah. Now, LSU could lose to somebody else and still not win the SEC West, but if I'm Nick Saban, and I am trying to make sure that I go into LSU as healthy as I possibly can, and what you know is going to be an incredibly physical and violent game in Baton Rouge, I want Tua as healthy as he can possibly be. And we don't have access to the medical report, but he's been wearing a brace the past couple of weeks. He came out and he went into the tent for them to look at his knee. You have the ability now with the bye week coming up, if you sit him for the Tennessee game, you effectively have 3 weeks for him without contact to get ready and be basically 100% for the LSU game. I think it makes a lot of sense for Alabama, given what their goals are and given how inferior, in theory, Tennessee is as an opponent, to go ahead and give the reins to Jalen Hurts and let Tua sit out and come back as healthy as he possibly can be when you're really going to need him on the road against LSU. You're a Bama guy, Jamar. What do you think? Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, it does. The only question that I have, and I don't think Nick Saban would care about the answer to this question at all. This isn't something that he can factor in because it's not part of his job description. If Tua misses that game, does that open the door for somebody else to snatch the Heisman from him? I'm not, like I said, Nick Saban's not going to care about that, but I'm just curious what your thoughts are there.
Well, first of all, there's only a couple of guys, I think, in legitimate contention or will be in the month of November now. I think it's Haskins, obviously, up at Ohio State, who's posting good numbers, and I think it's Tua. And what we have seen happen over and over again is Heisman voters reward signature moments in supremely big games. And to me, the biggest game that Alabama is going to have on their schedule by far is going to be this game against LSU. So if Tua goes out and performs well and throws four touchdown passes and Alabama is dominant against LSU, or if LSU gives them a real challenge and Tua makes plays late that are incredible to win that game, nobody is going to remember what happened in a 28-point win over Tennessee. Now, if you're Saban and you're looking at Tennessee and you think, oh, you know what, maybe this team is a little bit better, maybe I'm nervous because Jeremy Pruitt knows all the skill position people, and I think we need Tua to win this game comfortably, maybe that's a different feeling. But I'm just looking at the past 2 years. Alabama has won with ease against Tennessee with Jalen Hurts at quarterback. I don't know why that would suddenly change in year three. I don't think Tennessee is particularly a better team than they have been the past couple of years necessarily, even coming off the win over Auburn. I think water tends to find its level, and I think Alabama winning by around 20 points is probably going to happen, even if Jalen Hurts is the quarterback as opposed to Tua.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific.
Clay Travis is in London. He'll be back with us in the first hour of tomorrow's show, first hour of Thursday's show from across the pond. He'll host by himself on Friday from London. We'll replay the top five, bottom five segment that we did in the first hour today to open hour three, so stick around for that. Our thanks to Alex Marvez for joining us the last 20 minutes or so here on Fox Sports Radio. If you missed any of that, go ahead and subscribe to the podcast via iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, wherever it is that you get your podcasts. You can certainly subscribe to Outkick the Coverage and become part of the now million-plus downloads easily, monthly, that we get here on this radio program. Jeff Schwartz is with me. I'm Jason Martin. He's at Jeff Schwartz on Twitter. I am at JMartZone. Danny G, Roberto Flores, Dub Yarbrough, Eddie Garcia, all of them spinning the dials radio style for us this week. So today, Boston at Houston, Eovaldi versus Keuchel, 5:09 first pitch. Then Milwaukee at Chavez Ravine playing the Dodgers, 9:09 or thereabouts on FS1 will be the first pitch. Gio Gonzalez and Rich Hill. So, Jeff, the Dodgers were shut out 4-0 by the Brewers, and the Brewers are doing it with starting pitching, which no one really expected going into the series. And the Dodgers are in a bit of trouble, and I know that that makes you extremely happy, both as a Giants fan and somebody that can now smack talk Danny G and the fellas out in Los Angeles.
The best part is all my Dodger friends are like, well, the Giants are sitting at home right now. I mean, yeah, sure, I guess we are, but, you know, Dodgers haven't won since 88, so I'm not really sure how much they can talk about it. You know, I turned the game on in the ninth inning last night. You know, I was kind of back and forth, and then I realized, oh, wow, the Dodgers have the bases loaded. I believe it was, Danny, if I'm correct, was it no outs or one out with the bases loaded?
I want to say one out.
One out.
I know Bellinger was the second out, right? And then Dozier was the third out.
Yeah. And the Brewers closer then struck out both guys, a nasty curveball on Bellinger, and then caught Dozier looking at the end. Yeah, you're right about the bullpen, right? I mean, I think that the Brewers would like to win a game without throwing Hader, and they threw him again last night. And I thought Smoltz brought up a good point. They didn't need to throw him last night, but once he's up in the pen, you got to use him at some point. And you're right, the Brewers want to win this series with their bullpen, and when they don't have to do that, you know, it saves them. Hader only threw last night, he threw two batters last night, so that saves him for tonight, obviously, which is a big plus for them. It's amazing how we've gotten to a point where baseball is get your starter to maybe five innings and let your bullpen take over. I mean, we saw David Price the other night, 4 2/3, get your bullpen. We saw last night in a regular season game, you let the starter go past six, not in this game, get him right to six, go right to your bullpen. And that's the way the postseason is built now. Get your bullpen with a lead and let it roll. And it was interesting last night, Kiki Hernandez and the Dodgers after the game kind of went off on the fans for not having energy in the ballpark, not being there to cheer their team on. And he also talked about his team as well, not having the energy. I know Danny, I know the time doesn't help the start of the game, but do you think tonight it's a 6 p.m. Pacific start? Do you think people will be there on time?
It's hard to say. You know, when your team wins regularly, and I know you don't know about this since 2014, Jeff, but when you have all these division titles and you've gone to the World Series, the problem is a lot of Dodger fans are daydreaming about having a World Series ticket. And you know what? Those were averaged $1,300 last year.
Yeah.
And so who wants to, you know, blow your stash of money on one of these games when you want to go to a World Series game? So that's what the challenge is. I'm actually going to go Wednesday. It was a couple hundred dollars just for my ticket, a grip for the parking. You know the food's going to be even more expensive. So everything gets jacked up. So that is the challenge, is that the fans expect the team to go to the World Series, and so they don't want to spend their budget on a regular playoff game when they want to use that money for a World Series ticket.
Somehow, one of my buddies last year got World Series tickets for $300.
I want his phone number because I have no idea.
I don't know how
he
went to every World Series game. Him, his wife, and their young son. Like, I don't know how. I text him like, dude, I know how much you make. Like, you're not making enough to go to buy $3,000 worth of tickets to every game, or I guess two because the baby was still a lap baby. And so, you need his hookup.
You know, Bueller, he throws heat, and who was it? Ryan Braun was interviewed on FS1 after the game. He said that Buehler throws the best pure stuff in baseball. And if anyone knows about the best pure stuff, it's Ryan Braun. But Rich Hill's a veteran. Well, he's a veteran. Rich Hill will pull the Dodgers even tonight.
Yeah, you sound very, very confident about that. We didn't even get to talk about Mr. Grandal. He's having a tough stretch right now, and I know that they had to go after the fans for just booing him vociferously and constantly last night. They didn't have anything else to get excited about, so they just went ahead and booed that guy.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
I'm Jason Martin. Jeff Schwartz is with me. He's down in Charlotte at GEOFF Schwartz on Twitter. I'm at JMartZone. We welcome in our usual Tuesday Hour 3 guest, Petros Papadakis from out on the West Coast. Petros, how are you today?
Good morning, gentlemen. Thank you for having me. I'm doing okay.
So talk to me about the Dodgers. See, you're a real Renaissance man, so I never know necessarily what you've seen and what you're doing and where you are, but I imagine you watched the Dodgers last night, and it appears that they are in a little bit of trouble.
Yeah, I was there last night, and whenever you're down in a playoff series and you're a team that people expect to win, and last year you were in the World Series all the way to Game 7, like, you write that scenario for any town or any franchise, and there's going to be some angst. But if you write that scenario in L.A., and yesterday was the 30th anniversary of Kirk Gibson's home run, 1988 was the last time the Dodgers won the World Series. I'm 41, so I'm getting pretty old. There's a lot of people out there that didn't remember that or didn't see it. And there's a lot of angst, and then you add what happened at the end of the game with Kike Hernandez calling out the fans for booing Yasmani Grandal, who's having an abysmal series. Mm-hmm. And it's one thing to call out the fans and say it was a little quieter, but I mean, the Dodgers break an attendance record every year. Like, every single year, they have the best attendance in Major League Baseball, and their fans are passionate and fabulous. They just didn't score any runs. I don't know what they were going to cheer about. So it was an unfortunate night. That's the one thing I agree with Kike Hernandez for Dodger fans, because it was just a bad night for the Dodgers all around. I don't think they're down 3-1 or anything, but, and Rich Hill's a pretty competitive guy, so it should be interesting tonight. But yeah, there's a lot of angst in town, man. People are freaking out.
Yeah, and Grandal, we talked about it. You just mentioned it. He's 7 for 68, 30 strikeouts in his postseason career. He's not playing well away from the bat either.
Well, so I'm no sabermetrician, but I can tell he's not playing well.
Yeah, short-term or long-term, he's not playing particularly well. Are you surprised that the Brewers are doing it with starting pitching? Everybody expected, all right, they'll get to their bullpen if they can get a lead. But they're getting decent yardage, decent time out of their starting pitching. That has to be a little bit concerning also.
Yeah, I mean, no one ever knows what's going to happen in these games. They become so ridiculous with all the moves that the managers make, and sometimes they make all the right moves and the same guy can make all the wrong moves the very next day. I'm sure there's some data somewhere that makes sense of all of it, but I can't make sense of some of these games, especially the ones in the World Series last year, and just the way the tide turns and then Yu Darvish goes out there and gets his chest ripped off. I mean, who knows what's going to happen? It is an adventure, but you have to have a lot of patience for it. You know, these games take like 4.5 hours.
Yeah.
And there's just so much that goes into it in the postseason. It's kind of like instrumental jazz. You have to really sit through it. And sometimes it's painful.
You mentioned the Dodgers not having won in such a long time, and I'm a Giants fan, so I'm not terribly disappointed about that. But do you think that sometimes that they can kind of feel that and they press a little bit too much in the postseason?
You know, I think that there's something to that. I think you saw that with the Cubs for decades, you know, and people that go to Wrigley Field, and before they won their title, of course, said the place was quiet. It's like they're always waiting for something bad to happen. And I think that does happen to a certain degree with Dodger fans, but not at this point. To me, I think the fans are a little bit, and the team is maybe, and all year, has sort of been complacent in some areas, which is not a bad thing. They've been very calm and climbed themselves out of a pretty big ditch that they dug for themselves early in the year. But there is something to that. I'm not sure if it's happening right now, but there's something to it.
Let's switch over to football now. The Rams keep winning football games. They won their two road games. They got another road game this weekend in San Francisco. How do you stop this team? Is it just the Rams might get bored a couple games and just not give it all? Like, I don't know how anyone's going to stop this offense.
Yeah, and we've all seen, you know, we're saying the same thing about the Chiefs, and they finally got beat. It took the Patriots to do it, but we say these things about teams early in the year, and you're right. I mean, just football logistics, if you talk about it really simply, makes it hard. They have a great back, and they can block, so they push people off the line of scrimmage and can run with him. So if you commit your safety a little closer, you don't get a lot of help down the field. And Goff can make the throws, and they have a guy that can go deep really fast. They had one last year in Watkins. This year it's Cooks, who's having a better year. And they have a lot of really good underneath guys, and everybody knows their role. And this guy's a really good play caller. And they structured the offense well. And they spent money on defense. They're not stopping a lot of people, but it's hard to stop people when your offense is so prolific. That's kind of, it's kind of weird in football. If your offense scores a lot of points, your defense gives it up a little bit. It's just, it's part of the deal for a lot of teams. So that's probably going to happen. But, yeah, they look great. It's still October, but they look really special. Can that guy make plays in games and the playoffs? Jared Goff, is that going to happen? It looks like it might. But how do you stop him? I'd stop Gurley. You know, I'd put 7-8 guys consistently into the box and get after Gurley's ass and then see what happens with Goff. But, you know, then you're putting people in a bad position one-on-one, and they've made a lot of plays. So, I mean, I'm not a coordinator. Nobody pays me to be a coordinator. I'm just a fat idiot on TV.
He's Petros Papadakis, our guest here on Outkick the Coverage from AM 570 LA Sports. I know that you're on the pulse of things, and one thing I've always appreciated about the Petros and Money Show is just how out of the box you're willing to get, but you also have a good sense of what's happening in LA. And I think the question that, at least me being here in Nashville across the country from you, has about this is, is L.A. starting to kind of embrace the Rams? I mean, LeBron starts playing basketball on Thursday. Are people going to care about the Rams, despite the fact that they're probably the best overall team in the league right now?
Yeah, people, it's gaining some traction. And the tale will really be told when their arena opens. Because we love something new in Los Angeles. We're the biggest front-running city in the world. And most of the people in Los Angeles, like punk-ass Clay when he's out here, are not from here. So, you know, they'll embrace anything that they think is cool. As far as the real city and the people in the city, I think that's gaining some traction, too. And people are kind of into the Chargers. If they get it going offensively, they look good. L.A. loves a winner. Now, does that mean it's going to be long, consistent love? Perhaps. I mean, but that's not what happened in St. Louis. I mean, the Rams went out there and won a Super Bowl and were very good and went to another Super Bowl. And, you know, it fizzled out about a decade later. So I'm not sure about the long-term appeal of anything here anymore. It's such an interesting thing. If it's not the Dodgers or the Lakers, sometimes people don't show up. Well, USC football, you know, they consistently do great attendance. UCLA is a little bit more complicated because the Rose Bowl's far from campus. But I think they've made significant strides just this year. But when the arena opens and they have to really sell very expensive personal seat licenses, and you guys know all about that pro football stuff a lot better than me, that's when we'll really find out. And, you know, the other part of it that people don't understand is the Rams didn't leave L.A. in the 90s. They left L.A. in 1980 and went down to Orange County. And you all know about the Angels and trying to find Mike Trout and all that, that Anaheim is not really a nationally recognized place. And by nationally recognized, I mean L.A. doesn't recognize Anaheim. You know, Mike Trout gets lost nationally. Yeah, Mike Trout gets lost in L.A. You know, we don't get Mike Trout news. So the Rams hadn't been around for a really long time. But L.A. loves a winner, so I guess that doesn't answer the question.
Yeah, it sort of does. We'll stay in L.A. and then we'll move to college football a little bit. But LeBron starts playing on Thursday, as we said. The expectations, I don't know if they're through the roof out there or not. Certainly the coverage is through the roof everywhere. You can't turn on a television without hearing about the Lakers. What do you actually think the Lakers are going to look like on the floor? Like, is this a 50-win team? I kind of tend to think they're probably a little shy of that, but I honestly don't know what LeBron means with this crew because we just haven't seen him.
Yeah, I could see them going on incredible win streaks and also some bad spots, and I don't know if he's going to give Luke Walton the shoulder like he gave to Spoelstra, but I'm sure there'll be some serious growing pains. And I'm still under the – he's one of the great players, and he can carry a team almost anywhere. But I'm under the impression that this was not a move for LeBron to win championships. This was a move for exactly what you mentioned, 24-hour media coverage in one of the media capitals of the world. And he wants to eat with Al Pacino and Leonardo DiCaprio. He wants to do a show with Drake. And he's going to play basketball too. And I'm sure he's going to be great, and they're going to go to the playoffs. But this is not a championship basketball team. And that's, frankly, what you'd expect, having the best player in the world on the team. But I don't think that's what this is a play for. This is a play for clicks and views and sell tickets and make it an event. And it's a hell of an event. It's going to be, to me, the coverage is a little forced, but I understand. And that's what people are into. That's what's happening here, whether you like it or not. But I don't think it's about really competing on the court for a championship.
Let's talk about college football, and I think me and you can talk about the Pac-12 conference forever, but we'll save the listeners that for right now. We could spend USC had a big win against Colorado. Oregon obviously beats Washington, but just a big picture college football look right now. It seems to me that the playoff feels sort of set outside of Notre Dame, right? We have an SEC team, probably an ACC team, a Big Ten team, or a Big 12 team. The Pac-12 is out. Does Notre Dame seem like the one big wild card right now?
Yeah, they are. If Notre Dame is any good, it's always the wild card because you can't leave them out if they're winning games, and obviously that's what they're doing. And I saw somebody's headline the other day. I wish I remembered who it was, but it said to make it to a championship in college football, you have to be really, really good and really, really lucky. And you that's going to happen. You know, it might even happen to Alabama, although it's hard to fathom, that they're going to show up flat in a game and somebody's going to take it to them, and you've got to find a way. And sometimes that way involves a little bit of luck. So I think this is a much better Notre Dame team, much more physically solid than the one that got beat by Alabama that had Manti Te'o on the team. I forget which year that was. But I think Brian Kelly's done a hell of a job maintaining tradition at Notre Dame as far as being really physical and having that identity, because that was their identity before I played, you know, when I played. They lost it under Charlie Weiss, and he kind of had to dig it out. And it's pretty impressive because they do push people right off the ball. That being said, I mean, Alabama looks unbeatable to me. And Michigan, I think, is a really good team with a great, just an elite defense that can't be overlooked, you know, as the season goes on. But you know what I mean. It's going to be a wild year. Other than Alabama, I think everybody's going to end up taking it to the chin.
He is Petros Papadakis. Follow him at Petros and Money on Twitter. Petros, appreciate you waking up early on the West Coast for us. Clay, will talk to you next week.
Hey, you guys have a great day, and God bless you both.
Appreciate it. That's Petros. He's the best.